You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Around the Block. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings, and gosh, do we have an action-packed for y'all today. So much is happening. Believe me, folks, we probably won't even get through topic number one, being the facility closures and transfers and those things. We'll see how far we get, but boy, these next couple of weeks are just going to be action-packed. So
Absolutely. So in addition to some announcements they made, they did another big drop of policy statements. Some of them were just staff related or, you know, kind of business related. But there was a number of things, and there were some points that the incarcerated population needs to be paying attention to. But let's dig into the closure memo. That was you know, a big issue, big surprise to a lot of people. As you know, having gone through an institution deactivation and closure back at, I just forgot the name. Where were you at that closed?
Carville.
I was totally gone from my brain. It's a big deal when an institution closes. It's disruptive for everybody.
Right. And I personally, personally went through a riff. I won't go into my experience. However, a lot of people are about ready to go through my experience. Real quick, folks, this isn't a fake background. We're here today. I'm here today in Colorado, north of Inglewood here. This is chairlift number 9 in Breckenridge. So decided to take the show on the road with us today a little bit, a little change of pace. So that's that. Anyway, without further ado, is Inglewood on that list, by the way?
Inglewood is not on the official closure year list. It was, list targeting. You had of targeted facilities. Inglewood was on there. Inglewood is kind of off there by itself, but it's not awfully far from the Florence complex. So when you look at institutions and you're looking, making decisions about closures, you know, there's a lot of things obviously that go into play. The Bureau was citing some staffing issues, but the really issue is that maintenance issue. It is expensive to maintain a facility and physical infrastructure. And when you're dealing with the kind of deferred maintenance that the Bureau has been dealing with for over several years, it's sort of at some point becomes a hill too big to overcome.
Wasn't the big, beautiful bill supposed to pay for some of that?
And they're working on it. And I think what they're looking at and kind of looking at the list, and we can kind of dive into that list a little bit, not the list that the other list, but the actual official closure list. Yes. And you look at that list. So for an example, FCI Latuna, which for those of you who may not know, is about as far as into West Texas as you can go. It sits right on the U.S.-Mexican border. But it's also not awful far from FCI Safford. Is just kind of up over the border into Arizona. That's also a low security facility. The satellite low, because on the list it talks about Latuna, the satellite low, and the satellite camp. The satellite low has been closed for a number of years. It's been vacant for a while. It just hadn't been officially closed. It was kind of laying dormant. The institution itself, looking this morning, population has them only having about 540 individuals in the FCI, and their satellite camps has a little bit more, has 154 individuals. But there are satellite camps and low security facilities in the general proximity. There is also a security concern as it sits there on the, you know, there is a security concern. It's sitting on the U.S.-Mexican border, and it's old. It is very old. In fact, it was opened originally. The original facilities were opened back in the 30s. So we're talking, it's pushing 100 years old.
And that's what makes the Big Spring closure kind of surprising, because the next nearest low going east would have been Big Spring.
Yes, but Big Spring is also, it's obviously not as old. It was opened back in the late 70s, but it kind of sits out there by itself. Its current population, as of this morning, was 400, that was listed as being at 490, and 92 with only 100 individuals in the satellite camp. And again, it's out there in the middle of nowhere. So you have to ask the question. And if I were sitting in my office, if I was sitting in my office,
looky here, that services. But
if I was sitting in my office in DC, you know what I would be doing? I would be running a roster and looking at those folks there, and where are they from? Are they really closer going toward Arizona? Are they actually going closer up north, up to El Reno, or are they closer going further east, getting into the Metroplex area, or are they actually from that area? And how many are actually from that area?
But I would beg to say, and I don't know, but that institution, because of where it's situated, did service some Dallas-Fort Worth area inmates. But not only that, Susan, it accessed Amarillo and the entire panhandle of Texas, Midland, and Odessa. So, I mean, those are some geographic.
Oh, absolutely. But it also comes down to, it serves those areas.
But is anybody there in them?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is they have the ability. And this is some of the things that I used to do in my capacity, was they have the ability to run a roster and look at that whole population and say, where's their release residence? And how many of that those fellas, because it's a male facility, how many of them are actually right from there, or will in fact a move move them a little closer? You think about it, the Metroplex between Siegelville and FMC Fort Worth. FMC Fort Worth has a large low security operation. Its medical facility is actually small. So between Siegelville and Fort Worth, you've got probably close, just shy of 2,000 beds, low security beds.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, going north into going up toward El Reno, Oklahoma. El Reno's a low as well, right?
I have to look that one up.
Yeah. Oh, it's a medium. You've got
medium with the camp, but you got Texarkana to the northeast
going that way.
Bastrop.
And like I said, you still have Safford going the other way. So again, looking at, are they really from that area? And where, how many individuals are really required to be served by that area? Big Springs, I was less surprised about Latuna. I was a little more surprised about Big Springs. I will be honest, but I can see it. The other,
another little micro thing I want to add about Big Spring and some of these places, if we don't own the land, that's part of the Army, Biggs Army Base and stuff like that. That's also a consideration.
Absolutely.
And I think that was a consideration. There was a lot of, remember when Fort Bliss was in El Paso and you had inmates going to Fort Bliss before the FSL. So I think one of the considerations out there, folks, is do we actually own the land that the prison's sitting on? And let me tell you, that makes a difference. Even at Carswell, we own that land.
That was
bought that land.
Transferred to DOJ.
Right. Some of these other joints, the DOJ owns that land. So anyway, that's just another consideration that I don't think a lot of our viewers are going to kind of understand the nuance of that.
Right.
Like, you know what?
It's tough. Yeah. You know, are there going to be some incarcerated individuals who end up getting moved further from home? Undoubtedly. It's not going to be perfect. Something else that I know I would be looking at, and I'm certain regional staff are talking to their people about, is, okay, so you got people sitting in Big Spring low. Do they need to be in a low? Can they get transferred to a camp? Can we keep them in reasonable proximity by moving them to a satellite camp at another site? And that's, again, an important consideration. Sometimes, right, someone's sitting there at a camp, their management variable maybe hasn't expired yet, because when they originally got a management variable, you know, their incident report was maybe had still was six or only 6 or 8 months old, but they got a year or a 2 year management variable and their incident reports have cleared and they could go to a camp. I saw that a lot when I was sitting in the Mid-Atlantic, was folks that were in Lowe's that could have moved to a camp and weren't being moved to camps for whatever reason. It wasn't, you know, they weren't coming to team yet, or their management variable didn't expire for 3 months and they came to team this month. And well, you know, your management variable hasn't expired. You're going to have to wait, and things like that. Hang on. I just remembered I didn't turn my phone volume off. I hate to do that because I don't want it to ring. Okay. You know, so there could be folks sitting there that could move to a satellite camp, and keeping them in the right area.
And that goes for every low on the list.
Every one of them. Yeah. They should absolutely, they should be reviewed. And if they're appropriate, even if they've got a management variable still, even if their custody classification isn't due yet, they should be updated, at least from my perspective. That custody classification should be updated and reviewed, make sure it's current and correct. And if they can move to a camp, that's the thing to do. Hey, also on that list was Taft. Taft has been closed for a while. If I remember correctly, it's like sitting on some kind of fault line. For those who are like really old, like we are, we remember Taft was actually part of a contracting experiment where Taft and FCI Elkton were open simultaneously. Elkton remained under Bureau control, was a Bureau facility, and Taft was a contract run facility. And it was kind of meant to be a side-by-side comparison. I don't know how side-by-side it was, but it stayed under kind of the umbrella. And but I believe it sits on a fault line or something crazy like that. So it's been vacant for a while as well. So that's just a formal closure. Petersburg Low.
Wow.
I have mixed feelings about this.
Wow.
Because Petersburg, one, the Mid-Atlantic region has limited low security bed space. I mean, you've got FCI Ashland, you've got FCI Ashland, you've got the low.
You got two Butler Lows.
Yeah, but they've got a lot of your care three folks. You've got the low at Butner. You've got the low at Lex, but both of them have like a lot of unhealthy people. So Ashland and Petersburg were essentially the healthy or just have a few issues, care one, care two places. But Petersburg Low is ancient. It's another.
Did you run your numbers? What was the count?
Right now, it's got about 445 folks at it. But Petersburg Low in its heyday actually housed more like 1,000 plus individuals. And I was still in the regional office. So you're talking even before my promotion central office, when they had put a huge pop cap on them because they were having to rebuild food service, and they were going to bring in mobile kitchens, you know, kind of like Army mobile kitchen type trailer type things. For satellite feeding, but they weren't going to be able to accommodate their size. So they had to push their volume down. And like, you know, I moved to the central office in 2019. So we're talking quite a few years ago, and it's never come back up to capacity. It's old. It was opened in 1932, was originally I believe it was a reform school for boys way back in the day.
And Susan, I'm glad you're going over these facts, because I'm sitting here not as knowledgeable, particularly about those East Coast, Mid-Atlantic and East institutions. And I'm thinking about just the physical location of where Petersburg is.
Oh, location-wise. Look, yes. You know, I used to talk about when I when it was in the region and I was trying to manage and kind of, one of my responsibilities was to keep like oversight of the populations going on at my different facilities. And we used to talk about the I-95 population corridor. And so the institutions, Petersburg and Cumberland, Maryland, and of course, Cumberland is just that side of the 95 corridor. But if you look at the Bureau facilities that run along that Eastern Seaboard, low security units are a challenge. So, you know, I can see the issue with a closure because of the age, because of the infrastructure, but I think they're going to have to look at something to maintain more. They're going to have to figure out low beds somewhere else, whether that means you look at, you know, maybe the medium
farther. Yeah.
Maybe the medium security numbers aren't necessarily needing, and you downgrade FCI Petersburg medium to a low. And then, of course, that's a newer design low. That's got 1500 beds. It was always bigger than the low itself. You know, if they can accommodate the medium security population and kind of redistribute that, maybe that's an option. But I think they're going to have to revisit that. Of course, you know, many, many years ago, Congress prohibited the Bureau in terms of new construction to build new lows. So the only lows that we get are mission changed lows. And then, of course, under the Biden administration, they stripped out the use of the contract facilities for non-U.S. citizens, which is where that was what primarily was used for. I mean, not primarily. That's what the Bureau used. The contract providers, the contract institutions were for low security, non-U.S. citizens subject to deportation.
And that's what a third of Big Spring was, because you had those other joints right on the other side of the flight line.
I was like right across the street.
you had two retired BOP wardens that ran those joints for that private company. And then they could just roll out of Big Spring on their projected release date, roll right into those ICE facility.
Absolutely. So that was kind of, that was interesting. That was another one I was kind of surprised with, but I understand, is the FMC Lexington Satellite Camp. That's a female camp. Female camps, and we've got just a couple of institutions that have a female camp that is a satellite camp to a male facility. And from a logistics standpoint, I can tell you that's a problem. So the Bureau uses satellite facilities to provide the exterior support to the secure facility. So whether they're working in the warehouse, mowing grass, doing all those kind of outside work details. But the other thing that satellite camp populations are used for is when the main secure institution is locked down and we're feeding people, or maybe there's a work project. So you close down this part of the yard and you bring in campers with the kind of skill sets that, and the kind of work that we're not going to have a high security. For instance, doing welding work, you're not going to have a high security inmate, right? Handling a welding equipment, you would have a camper doing it. So you'd, you know, close down part of your yard and you'd bring these campers in to do this secure work, and they were physically separated, right? You're not going to bring females in. Females are going to stay here. They are not going to get that close. It's just not going to happen. Another really big issue is town drivers. Camp standard kind of operating procedure is satellite camps. You'll have one or two individuals that are town drivers that run errands to, say, pick up supplies from local vendors. Maybe they're delivering, maybe they're dropping off stuff at local vendors, but their primary duty is driving folks to the bus station
and medical appointments.
It's mostly going to back and forth to the bus station for releases or for transfers to halfway house.
And for what it's worth, one of our clients is a female town driver. But anyway,
But very coveted position. We are not going to let a female town driver transport a male offender from inside the fence to the bus station. Just not going to happen. Period. End of sentence. Not going to happen. We are not going to put, the Bureau is not going to put a female in that kind of situation. It's just not going to happen. So now you have a female satellite camp who cannot provide those services. So then what happens? How do they get to the bus station? A staff member's got to transport them. And that's a problem, right? So plus Lexington is also a really old facility. Obviously the satellite camp is not as old, but it is a very old facility. But when you look at the female facilities in the Mid-Atlantic, right, going back to the geography, you've got Lexington, which is now going to close, and they've got about 200. Did I write it down? Right now they have over 200 females. And then you have Alderson in West Virginia. Now, Alderson is another very old facility, which if I was going to put a facility on the chopping block, I would put Alderson.
You've been on record 10 times.
I have been, saying, I am formally on record. Like 10 years ago, I did a paper on a proposal to close Lexington. Interestingly,
you mean Alderson or Lexington?
I mean Alderson, sorry. Alderson. But interestingly, in that same paper, I also proposed making Morgantown a satellite camp to Hazleton.
Yep.
And I want it, and I still think it's a brilliant idea, so I'm really glad they went and did it. But for those who are not from the Mid-Atlantic area, Hazleton and Morgantown are maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes apart from each other, 15. They're very close. They're just like down the road. But Hazleton, as a correctional complex, has the USP, the satellite camp, the male satellite camp, the USP, the male FCI, and then the satellite female low, the secure female low. In a perfect world, I would separate the male FCI and the satellite low, make the satellite low its own facility as part of the complex, and attach Morgantown to the low and make it female.
What's the count at Morgantown?
Morgantown's count is very low right now because they've got some units closed. They are doing some repairs. Morgantown is one of the institutions that's being repaired. Morgantown can... under 400 right now because they've got units. They're doing repairs at Morgantown. But Morgantown is can house over 1,200 individuals. Where it's located, it provides... It's ideal for the western half of the Northeast region for, you know, as well as the Mid-Atlantic and in Ohio. So Pennsylvania, Ohio, down into West Virginia, down into that. I would really, and if anybody's listening to me, I probably still have a copy of that paper. I can send it to you. I would make Morgantown female and a satellite camp to the SFF and make the SFF not a satellite facility.
So folks, let's kind of, this is a good time to kind of chime in here. So right now we've gone over several institutions that if you were just to see the name of the institutions on a black and white piece of paper, and I have, you know, Susan, I rely on Susan to do the real work, right? In terms of looking at the counts and stuff like that. And I'm, thank God you did that, but it's not as bad as it seems. Okay, folks. These places are shutting down, and it is going to be bad for whoever's affected, but it's not like when I thought Petersburg, I thought, oh no, 1,000 people, blah, 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 or whatever. You know, some of these joints that were like Latuna that used to be able to hold easy peasy 1,000 plus, but the camp was easy peasy. They'd RDAP there. You know what I mean? Like, oh no, all these inmates are going to get displaced. It's not like that. It's not like that.
It's going to be rough. I mean, we'll be honest. Like I said, there are folks who are going to get moved further from home. It's going to be rough on the staff. For the institutions that are moving, becoming satellite facilities, becoming a satellite facility means there are certain departments that are going to get rifted because they're going to get combined. So, you know, you only need one HR department. You only need one financial management. You only need one employee development. But on the unit management side, on education, on food service, in terms of the line staff, the not the department heads, there's going to be department heads that are rifted. There's going to be exec staff rifted, right? But of the staff that work directly with the individuals, with the incarcerated population, psychology, education, health services, unit team, all of those folks, those folks stay the same. Yes, their departments get consolidated.
Okay, you know? So let me go ahead and do, I'll do my RIF story as brief and succinct as you can, but this is, I believe it's, I see it unfolding just as it did for me. I was at an institution in Louisiana that was actually part leprosy colony. It's weird. We didn't own the land by any stretch of the imagination. We end up closing. Now, they had two rooms. You could put your stuff in the Carswell room, right? Because Carswell was going to be an up-and-coming facility. You could put yourself in the Federal Transfer Center room, which the FTC in Oklahoma was an up-and-coming facility. So you had two blue light, we called them Kmart blue light specials, right? So on any given week, you had two blue light specials of who was willing to pick up who. Or you could find your own job, right? And that was...
And with a RIF letter, you got priority. As long as you were qualified, you got priority placement.
I tell you what, these husband-wife combinations ripped them, man. Tough duty when you're married as husband-wife, try and go to a place. I fortunately am a native Texan, still live there, and I went to Carswell, albeit a female institution, and so did Susan. She
went by other means.
And so, but a lot of these, look, and I know some of you listeners are kind of, we hate staff and staff deserve to get screwed around and all that. And I hear you. I mean, but these people, man, they are on blast to find a job. And if, you know, you've been in the system for 10 years, you have all those benefits, you can walk away from that, you know, and take some civilian job in Anthony, New Mexico, there was a DTS and he owned a Blockbuster video in Tanukilo or whatever. Anyway, it was one of these almost like, it was on the Mexican border. You know what I mean? So it's crazy. I mean, so a lot of these folks are going to have to fend for themselves of staff. It's a tough situation.
It is. And now the other thing is a lot of these facilities are homesteading locations. So there are staff there that are retirement eligible and they may opt for that. But here's the other thing. And we've already started to see it. And you've seen a couple of congressmen or senators make comments, is the impact on the local community. For some of these places, you take a place like La Tuna,
Anthony, like, New Mexico, bro, it's going to take a huge hit.
It's going to have a huge economic impact. Closing institutions is, it's not done lightly at all.
Right.
But again, while some of these, the Beaumont Low surprised me a little bit, but there are, again, if you look at what else
multiple
is
multiple joints.
It's a complex for the staff. It's not going to be an issue. They're just going to kind of filter into the other complexes. But in terms of the population and looking at it, when I was looking at, you know, Beaumont is actually pretty close to both the Oakdale complex, which, of course, you know, the Oakdale had an FCI medium and a low. They reconfigured the medium. So now it's two lows. So there's over 2,000 beds there. And then FCI Bastrop going the other way. So they have between the Oakdale facilities and the Bastrop facility, their population, unless they're specifically from the greater Beaumont, Houston, that area of Texas, they have a place to go to.
You know, the other nuance I'll mention, like say with the Beaumont, is let's say you've been used to working with a low security inmate or a female staff. I'm not bagging on female staff, but I think you get my drift. And all of a sudden, hey, your next post is in the penitentiary. Your next post is in the mediums. And y'all know that in these mediums, there's people that are life, people doing life all day in mediums. You know, there's affiliates all day in mediums. People get hurt. You see what I mean? So, man,
it's an adjustment.
Now, props to you, Susan. Man, when I knew you, I wouldn't think, oh yeah, Susan Giddings, USP Lee, body alarm in hand. Hey, you did it.
I did it 11 years. It was that was a huge adjustment for me. Yeah. You know, at the props, when I transferred. When I transferred, I had only had experience with minimum and low security. And of course, I mean, I worked inside the hospital and administrative unit, but it was females. So it was a huge change. So there was a list floating around of other possible targets.
But y'all, this list that I put up of other possible targets, just take it lightly.
Take it very lightly. I think in looking at it and doing a little research, I think it was an older list that maybe is being recirculated to see where do we stand? Because if you look, FCIS still was on that list.
Right.
FCIS still is converting to female. It's going to be a female low. The whole Aliceville to Estill conversion, which going back to Beaumont, Aliceville is also, you know, we're putting beds, more low security male beds in a different part of the Southeast. You know, again, going back to where do we need the beds? That's always really important for the Bureau. You know, having Beaumont low, Oakdale, both lows, and then Bastrop low, all in a reasonably close proximity to each other. You have to ask the question, or the Bureau has to ask the question, do we need that many? Do we need that much? So, you know, when you start to kind of pull out and do the 50,000 foot view or 20,000 foot view, you know, you can kind of start to see, well, here's a low, here's a low, here's a low. Well, now we're looking at closing the low at Beaumont. Not looking, they're going to close the low at Beaumont. They've already done the mission change and they're working on that. Aliceville is going to become a male facility, low, I believe, medium, low, I think. And Estill is going to become a low female facility. Yes.
Is it possible for somebody who's in a low presently and that person may be on the cusp of being a camp? Could they do a management variable and get that person? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Especially if it's within sight. Like think about someone who's going to drop on their next birthday. Or maybe they had an incident report 2 years ago that's going to come off. You know, they have 18 months clear conduct. It's still being scored against them for another 6 months, but they've been doing well since then. You can do a management variable early.
Virtually. I mean, the wardens have the power to do it. But folks, this is a huge deal. I think that'll really pick up a few inmates in this process. That are sitting in lows, and next thing you know, they sign a management variable, person's camp eligible, and then that's that.
And I think the important part there is whether it's the local case managers, the CMCs, the regional support, people need to be looking. You know, they haven't released a timeline on how this is going to happen. They haven't released a timeline, and so, you know, I don't want people to go, oh my gosh, this is all going to happen in the next 30 days. That's not realistic. I'm sure we'll see more information coming out in the next several weeks, but it's appropriate to look at people in terms of where they're going to go. Just moving them and going, okay, we're sending this unit over to this institution. We're sending these 500 people here doesn't make sense. So I would hope that you would see stuff. And that's going to be where regional staff, that would have been something that I would have been involved in when I was working in the regional office to support the institution in helping them and running the rosters and saying, hey, look at this batch of people. they might need to go to camp. So, but yeah, so, you know, on that list was FCI Estill. It's in the process of converting. Wouldn't worry about that. FCI Loretto is old. It is weirdly configured because it was not designed to be a prison. The Bureau took that building over. And you have to consider the proximity for and how close other institutions are. Personally, I always wanted to work at Loretto.
What was the count?
I did not look them up because they're on the kind of interest, you know, the not the official list.
Oh, they're
I didn't
on the targeting them, list.
Yeah. So I didn't look them up. But yeah, I always wanted to go. I always wanted to work at Loretto and I didn't get an opportunity. Only because I'm into genealogy and it would be because my family is from Cambry County. Genealogical history, family history tree, you know, that's me. Anyways, that's why I always wanted to go to Loretto so I could do in-person research. MCC New York is already vacant and it's just not been officially like
closed on paper. Yep.
Yeah. It's still technically Milan is another old facility. But I don't necessarily see that going anywhere.
What's the count?
It's on your target list. But Myland and its location. Yeah. I don't see Myland as being, I mean, it's old. I don't know about if it's infrastructure. I'll tell you how old it is. I did my courtesy interview while still in grad school at Myland. Or right after grad school, I had just graduated and had applied for the Bureau and I drove up because I'm up here in Northeastern Ohio. So I drove up to Milan to do my courtesy interview. It is an old facility, but its location I think is really important in terms of providing service to an area. I mean, you think about it, it's right there outside of Detroit. You've got Chicago, not far away. You've got Cleveland and Northern Ohio, Toledo and all of that area, you know, and then of course there's nothing else also going upward north in Michigan. So I think Myland
would be okay.
USP Lewisburg has been downgraded. Of course, it's now an FCI. It's been downgraded. It's obviously extraordinarily low. I mean, extraordinarily old, like intro to correctional history old. And it's also very closely located to FCC Allenwood. So if I'm looking at how much money do we need to put into this institution when we have a federal complex, quite literally like...
Did you look at the counts?
No, I told you. I didn't look at any counts on the target list.
Plus, there's a big RDAP. One of the bigger camp RDAPs is Lewisburg.
Okay, camp. So they reactivate the Allenwood camp that was closed several years back now, and they relocate everything to FCI Allenwood. Lewisburg is one of those
I know
historical sites, but does it need to still be a prison? That is the question. That's the question to ask for Lewisburg. That's the question to ask for Alderson,
Atlanta,
West Virginia.
Atlanta was in a similar where inmates could Atlanta, just put their hand through the bricks of the wall in Atlanta. It was just disintegrating, literally.
They are historical sites, yes, and you know me and historical sites. I have a soft spot for historic preservation, but not in the form of prisons. There's just too many security concerns. Like I said, Alderson's still on my list. You know who's also on my list that hasn't been identified? Yankton, South Dakota. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a little itty bitty standalone camp. It needs
RDAP
to go.
Program. Oh,
you can put an RDAP program somewhere else. You can put an RDAP program somewhere else. I would.
Man, it's like a college campus.
I know.
Facility.
It is not a prison.
Facility is in good shape.
So funny story. One of my jobs. I was involved while I was working in doing a massive audit of cells and beds, nationwide audit. And I would put it all, you know, and I had to get institutions had to send me floor plans and bed counts. And I had to reconcile all this information, right? I was up to my eyes in beds and cells. And I was working on Yankton and I'm like, looking at it, and I'm like, and so I walk over to my boss and I'm like, I think we should talk about Yankton. And so I sit down and I explain, and I'm like, I don't know why it's still open.
I don't have a dog in the fight on Yankton, but I bet you this, you close that institution, there'll be some senators and congressmen and local people.
I'm sure.
Blowing DC up.
But you know, I just forgot her name. Noam, Kristi Noam. She's not in the administration anymore. She's moved on to something else. But I'm telling you, from a cost benefit standpoint, I'd use my red pen. If I had had I'm serious, God's honest truth. I literally said to my boss when we were going back and forth with the institution on how they were going to configure their housing spaces and things like that. And I remember telling my boss, I'm giving them one more option because what they're doing isn't working. And I was told, well, you know, we need to do what's best for the Bureau. And I looked at him and I said, so we're going to recommend closure, right? And he about had a heart attack because he understood. I did too, but the politics of closure, but I still.
And I'd make that to a large female camp. They could have the dog program there, RDAP, every kind of flavor of trauma. I know. Anyway,
cost
I'm just saying.
Benefit. Then they need to make it bigger. It's only got it's only like a 300 bed at most, like a 300 bed facility.
See, I thought it was about 500. I didn't know that.
I mean, it could, but it hasn't been 500 beds in probably 10 years. Anyway.
All right, moving along.
Okay, moving along. The rest on that list, if you remember back, my gosh, probably 10 years ago, the Bureau tried to make some changes at Danbury and set up with the with moving the males in and the females out because they needed more male capacity. Yep. And the congressmen and senators, not just in Connecticut, but in the entire New England area, had just a collective heart attack. And the Bureau kind of revised and extended their remarks. And now Danbury has a male low and a female satellite low and a female
mobsters were interested in. The, boy.
That was a hot mess.
It sure is.
So, yeah. So I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in that kind of target list. I think it's been floating around for a while. I don't ever see MCC New York coming back online. They'd probably be better off bulldozing it and starting fresh than to try to fix it.
I should probably say this to the end of the show, but we are 7 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
To the end.
You were right. We didn't even hardly get through that. Everything else.
Listen, folks, if your loved one is affected by these moves, right, and they don't know and their case manager won't talk to them and nobody will talk to them, and the staff are angry because the staff are being riffed. Why are they going to be inmate responsive? Call us. Just give us a call. And we can probably, at a minimum, give your loved one some talking points to either their respective case manager or CMC or somebody or whoever AW is standing mainline. Or, you know what I mean? Say, hey,
absolutely.
What about this? What about that? Instead, that way, your loved one can at least advocate for themselves to a facility that kind of round peg, round hole stuff. Because you know why? Because a lot of the case manager, if they're a rookie case manager, whatever, they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know.
A lot of staff. I mean, really, when you think about how long it's been since the Bureau's had a formal RIF.
Yeah.
Like most people haven't gone through it. Right before I started in the regional office back in 2012, the week before I arrived, there was some rifts that went on at the regional level at non-institutions, and they kind of reduced the number of staffing in the regions. And, these were folks, a lot of them had been in there for years, and there was no in nearby institution because it was a regional office and it wasn't co-located with an institution. You know, a lot of the RRMs are co-located with an institution. And if an RRM office gets closed or reconsolidated and they can opt to move in. So, you know, you were looking at people trying to find jobs. And so it is going to be difficult. A lot of staff have never gone through this. And so there's going to be frustration. There's going to be anger. And yes, in a perfect world, they're still going to be professionals and they're going to do what they need to do, but they're still human beings.
We're going to get through this.
Yep.
Everybody's going to get relocated. There's going to be some hard times for inmates and staff. I really feel for the staff, man, because it's going to be, here we go. This is a rough one. I mean, it is what it is with these RIFs. You have a priority, but I know a lot of our listeners aren't staff, so we're not going to go into that, but everybody's going to land somewhere safe. And everybody's going to be okay, okay? You may be inconvenienced, but you're going to be okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would be, you know, you mentioned about, giving us a call. I would really be thinking about, like, just my first advice just to everybody is be thinking about the custody classification. Could you go to the lesser secure facility?
Could you go one down?
Could you go one down?
And what's that window, Susan, beside having a birthday?
Oh, well, it could be any number of things. Things that are most obvious.
Your next team.
If you're looking at, if your custody classification isn't being updated to your next team, but they're going to make decisions before your next team. You know, custody classification only has to be updated annually. So, what was it? Just because it was right 6 months ago or 9 months ago, is it still right? Did you have an incident report that's now being not scored against you? Has that history of violence or history of escape that you had gotten older and it's gone over that cut point? So it's dropped in points.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If your loved one is one of those lucky ones that does get a management variable from below to a camp, please come to our Facebook group and say, hey, my loved one caught a deal on a management.
Yeah, variable. Absolutely.
We'd love to hear that. That's good. That's good sound correctional management. Mm-hmm. That saves the taxpayers thousands of dollars of money. You can actually furlough transfer some of these people at times, maybe later mm-hmm. on, maybe mm-hmm. not.
Absolutely.
But anyway, okay, 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, one other thing I was going to mention in terms of custody classification is that score for substance abuse use. The classification manual only scores an individual if they've had substance use per their PSR or incident reports within the last 5 years or greater than 5 years or never. So if you were scored when you walked in the door, but you've been sitting in prison for 2, 3, 4 years, and what does your PSR say when you last used? And maybe you were in pretrial status, so you were sitting in pretrial for a while, and that right there could be the difference between a low and a camp. So being aware of your custody classification and when is your toll gates for things coming down is important. So we are like at the end of the show. Posted a reminder out today. Bruce and I actually launched the Federal Prison Resources series on Amazon. And that's a one-stop shop to pick up any one of our 3 books and kind of put that out there, that link out there on the Facebook group today. We've had a lot of interest in our newest book on halfway house and home confinement under the Second Chance Act, educating a lot of people. Yeah. Also been really interested. Bruce and I are both also members of NACDL, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and I've had a couple of email contacts and made reference to shared with them those resources because I think, whoops, you just lost your piece there. I think it's also really important for criminal defense attorneys out there to be understanding how that PSR impacts people, understanding the relationship with FSA and RDAP and Second Chance Act and all of those things working together.
Can you imagine these judicial recommendations? I recommend Latuna. Sorry. I recommend this place. Sorry. So it's going to be an interesting curve.
When I was at Carswell, I had a judge do a judicial recommendation to send a female to Springfield.
Happens because it
was the medical center closest to her home.
Yeah.
Except Springfield's is and still was and still is a male facility. So those getting that information correct. But that's out there. That's available. Put it up on the Facebook page today and the link there for availability. And we've got just a boatload more stuff. We'll just have to
pick it up next week, y'all.
Yeah.
We'll get through all these crisis moments.
And we have been, you know, Bruce and I have been doing a little bit of travel. So we've been kind of on and off, and we've been replaying the shows in between. But go to LA Talk Radio and everything. We have been doing, what, 3 shows in a row with updates on policies and changes and stuff. So this I think, is YouTube, the third or fourth show now.
First Step Act YouTube channel as well.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're over time. But thanks again, everybody. Yeah, just come by our Facebook group, our YouTube channel. We're on LA Talk Radio site as well as Apple Podcasts and others. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great afternoon. Have a safe week. And we'll see you next time on Around the Block. Take care.
Everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.